This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kennison. It's 6 o'clock in the morning, Friday the 29th of November. And if I'm not mistaken, guys, this is the last day of the month, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. It's December next week.
When we come back on Monday, it will be December.
The last month of the year.
How amazing is that? My favorite month of the year, actually.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just something nice and pleasant about Christmas around the corner and New Year's and fresh
after
hope.
That, and then Chinese New Year.
You know, a new hope every year, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so speaking of Star Wars, yes. Yeah, there's no stunned silence in the room. Yes, the new
Star Wars. Because I have no idea what you're going to say.
The last of the Skywalker legacy is coming out this in December.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've completely lost
track. Episode 9.
Okay.
It's okay.
I'm obviously the only one in the room who's got this glazed look, because I can't even keep up. I'm from the generation of what, Empire Strikes Back, Return
Do you know
of
the last
Jedi?
Movie was 2 years ago? That's a long time ago, Xiaoning. But it's okay. It's to each their own. In fact, I'm not sure how I feel about the next movie, but we'll see once I watch it. I will definitely watch it.
I am also looking forward to December, mostly because I always act like Christmas is around the corner, starting from about June. So it's now the calendar has actually caught up to me, so I can sing Christmas songs in the car without feeling like an idiot.
So you round up to the nearest 6 months. Is that how you
operate? That's exactly how I do it.
Oh my. I'm just looking forward to all the presents I'm going to get. Ha! I'm a focus woman.
That, Roshan,
so
I think that was a very subtle hint.
Yeah.
Subtle hint about what?
For the rest of us in studio.
Ah, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
so
okay.
we need to plan what we're going to be getting Wang Xiaoning.
I think maybe the rest of us.
She can't hear us right now.
Kumpul together and buy Xiaoning one present.
No,
meets her expectations,
guys,
right?
That's a good idea.
We need to do the Secret Santa thing, which I really enjoy.
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
I want to do that, and I think everyone should really put their mind to it. Like, you know, and it's so much fun.
Yeah, we do it. We usually do a Secret Santa. Santa office wide, but maybe we should do one within the team. That would
be
quite
will.
Fun.
I'm planning
That's
for it.
That's very interesting.
Okay, all right. Hmm. Well, before we get to that though, because we're definitely going to be telling you all about our secret Santa plans. No, I'm just kidding. we do have a bunch of interesting topics to discuss with you this morning. What do we have on the list?
So, just after this, we'll be talking about how Tian Chou has clarified to represent Batu in GE15, right? So there was
so
a little bit of
he
does want to stand, but I think there was a little bit of a kerfuffle that happened recently where the current MP, Prabhakaran's car was egged, and there was a little bit of tension around getting him to step down, which was not so, that shouldn't have happened. And he's just come out to clarify, I didn't mean this time around, I meant the next election. So we're going to talk about that and what we feel that represents.
And talking about feelings, are we heading in the right direction? How do you feel? I want to know, because recently there's been a survey trying to determine where, you know, asking Malaysians whether the country is heading in the right direction. What's the pulse of the nation?
I couldn't help but imagine you in front of a crystal ball just now, just like you in front of a crystal ball, just saying, how do you feel? Let me predict your future.
Madam Zuza here in the studio.
Absolutely. And remember, if you want to weigh in on those conversations, you can always WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, though, a not-so-political topic to kickstart the day. We're going to be talking about resumes and what stands out to you in them. So be sure to stay tuned for that after some music. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was One Headlight by The Wallflowers, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin, Xiaoning and Roshan. Now, you know, when it comes to applying for jobs, the resume is always the most important step, right? Because that's how you get a foot in the door. You send in a resume, perhaps you're one of 100, 200 applicants for a job posting, and you have to ensure that your resume catches the eye of the recruiter. Otherwise, you won't get called back for an interview, and, you know, kind of that's that, right? So there's this article in the Fast Company written by someone whose job was to review at one point hundreds of entry-level resumes. And they wrote about what was necessary in order to get their attention, because they had this system where if a resume didn't catch their attention within the first 10 seconds, it was going in the bin. So out of the three of us in studio this morning, Xiaoning, you've actually reviewed resumes before. What was your system for doing that?
Well, it's you have to be quite methodical, right? So you sometimes you get 100, and then you kind of just firstly just look at all the qualifications. I mean, all those qualifications which aren't suitable, don't meet a certain criteria. I mean, let's face it, the world is super competitive, so you can choose, you can afford to choose. So perhaps the wrong degree, the grade that is not the best, okay, those just automatically get put aside. Okay, so then you're left with the balance. And then that's a little bit more where that subjective element comes in, right? Because what does the person say? What does the person say about himself? What can he bring to the job? What his past experience, if it's a job that requires previous experience? Then you go through that one by one. And then I have another, like, immediate, like, put in the bin kind of criteria. Anyone that says that, I like to make friends, I don't know why that drives me nuts, that goes out immediately, because here you're here to work and just work. Not that I don't want any to be sociable, but, you know.
No, but what has been the most impressive type of resume you've seen? What have you seen and been like, wow, this is a great resume?
Well, something very clear. Something simple, easy to read, all in one page, preferably, where he or she is able to put, like, okay, I'm a good, assuming it's a relatively entry-level job, right? You know, I've been a good student, a consistently good student. I pursue many interests. I'm well-rounded, and I'm eager and excited to get this job. If you can kind of summarize all this in one page, then you get my attention. And in a non-irritating font.
So you've basically summarized the entire article.
So no Comic Sans.
No Comic Sans, you know, and nothing too fancy, nothing like I cannot read. Like, you know, some people
use multiple colors
or use some like Roman kind of font where I cannot read, and then I'm irritated. Yeah. Really.
Here's a more divergent issue. Photo or no photo in the CV? Because this is something I've heard from multiple people.
I'm not bothered.
Yeah. So it's not a big deal.
No.
Because I know people who resist, who say, I don't want to put my photo there, because it's a matter of, I think it's just, they don't want to put that. But some have advice saying it humanizes the CV.
Okay,
I have no idea how to feel about that.
I am quite resistant.
For the record, I've never put a photo.
I did at one point, and then I took it out because I didn't like how it made me feel. Because and the reason why I put my photo in a resume, because a potential recruiter told me to my face, and I quote, "You're a pretty girl. You should put your photo on the resume."
That's so sexist,
yeah,
isn't it?
It was a woman who told me this, okay? And I wanted the job, so I was like, okay, grit my teeth and do it. I didn't get the job. Subsequently, I took it out because I'm just like, I don't like the image of that, the reminder my head, you know?
But I would say, I mean, if you take it one step forward, when the interview process comes in, people who I think don't make an effort to kind of dress for the job, there will be points deducted.
Yeah, I err on the side of overdressing.
Yeah,
for an interview rather than underdressing.
Yeah, I would rather you come a little bit more formal than super casual, because I've had people who, you know, for the work that they applied, I'm like, did you really wear this to come for the interview? How serious are you? You know, because you didn't look like you came prepared, or, you know, like you wanted to impress. You just like literally rolled up from the street and turned up, which is not the way to go, I guess, when you go for an interview.
Now, let's just change the topic slightly. What are your thoughts on video CVs? Because I've actually had to produce one for someone from a home that was applying to UKM, and she needed help to produce this video CV, and she doesn't have the skill set to do it. I felt like on one side, it allows people to showcase their abilities, but also it's kind of hampering to people who don't have the skill set to do it. You know, you have to, first, you have to have a computer that can do it. You have to be able to speak in front of a camera. And this is entry level into a university. You know?
Well, it just shows you how competitive everything is nowadays, right? I mean, and people, there's so many ways to kind of impress potential recruiters. And you know what? You post on social media also counts, because we look at that too.
Absolutely.
Oh, LinkedIn is great.
Not just LinkedIn.
Facebook, Twitter,
blogs.
Everything.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
Well, do let us know what you think. What stands out to you in a resume? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a few messages coming up for you, and then we'll be tackling some political stories from our local papers. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. That was Girlfriend in a Coma by The Smiths, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Xiaoning and Roshan. Now, there's been some tension over in the Batu constituency recently, because Tian Chua, who is the PKR vice president and also former Batu MP, he has now come out to say that he wants to be fielded in Batu, but for the next general election. So this is to try and put paid to some of the calls for the current MP, P. Prabhakaran, to step down in favour of Tien Chua after it was ruled he challenged the EC earlier this month, and basically it's been ruled that he can now stand for election. So there was a whole thing where Prabhakaran's his car was egged, and it was just a bit of a nasty situation all around because he basically refused the calls to step down from his position in favour of Tien Chua.
Yeah, as he should have, you know. I mean, there's no real basis for him to step down.
At least not in midterm.
Not midterm. And I mean, he was elected into office, right? I mean, the element here is that he got his votes because Tien Chua couldn't run, and it was more of a, we're not going to vote for the other side. Prapa is the only real avenue for us to vote what we want, right? And that time he was still an independent.
So he became the default MP for Batu, right? That was the view.
The view was that he was a Tien Chua proxy, basically. Because independents in this country generally don't do very well. So many of them lose their deposits because they just don't have the political machinery to back them, not in the same way that the established parties do. And Tien Chua threw his weight behind Prabhakaran when he realized that he couldn't run.
Yet he still tried to run, right? He's 22. He was 22 years old when he ran. Mm-hmm. And he broke the record for youngest MP, which was before that held by former Prime Minister Dr. Sri Najib Razak, who became an MP at age 23.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but that was also on the back, I think, of his father's death. Or he got the... I mean, then again, he was the son of a Prime Minister.
Yes.
So that's a whole different situation. If you didn't win your first election as a son of a Prime Minister, then there is something wrong there. But, you know, at 22 years old, that is quite an achievement for someone his age. And
on top of it, right, he's still juggling his law studies, by the way, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he's a graduate. I mean, he's finished his studies. So imagine you've got Batu, quite a large constituency, I'm sure has its own fair share of many issues. Mm-hmm. And then you've got party politics. And then you're trying to finish your law degree. Kudos to this young man, you know, for juggling everything.
Yeah.
But the question is, do you think it's fair that Tien Chua says, okay, come GE15, I'm just going to take over the seat?
That's the question, right? Because,
yeah.
I mean, he officially joined PKR, I think, in May 2018.
Prabha, you mean?
Yeah,
yes.
Prabha joined PKR in May 2018. So now he's under the purview of the party. Oh, that'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, so, I mean, Tien Chua can express an interest, but ultimately it's still up to the party to decide who runs where. But of course, you know, that's not going to stop them both from having it out in the media, which appears to be what they're doing. Because Prabhakaran also put out statements on social media, basically saying that it's more practical for him to keep serving the Batu constituents because he's a local boy. And the fact that he's young means that he can actually bring forward a much younger perspective also to the seat.
You know what they need? They need a primary. Just like how the Dems do it. Just have Tien Chua on one side and Prabhakaran on one side and have them make their cases to be MPs. Because this is an interesting case, right? Because Tien Chua was the MP for two terms. So
yes.
He's got that background and that he's an experienced MP.
10 years.
Yeah. And I mean, between 2008 and 2018, those were some pivotal years for the country.
Maybe the debate should, or the comparison could be what Tien Chua did when he was MP and what Prabha has done now.
Yeah, so,
and then look at that more objectively.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting because by the time GE15 rolls around, Prabhakaran will have a full term under his belt. And we'll see where the party decides to take the both of them going into that election. But do let us know what you think. You can always WhatsApp us 0187898899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are coming up on the 6:30 news now, but first some music. Here is "I Melt with You" by Modern English. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was "Dancing in the Moonlight" by Top Loader, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wong Xiaoning, and Roshan Kanisen. Now, there is this. So Emir Research has put out their inaugural National Worry Index, and this is a name I quite like.
Yes, so do I. I thought it was very...
It's very on the nose, right?
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what it looks at. It looks at what people are worried about right now. And so one of the things they asked about was whether or not the country is on the right track for the future. Now, they got about 2,000 2,000 respondents from all backgrounds and ethnicities. And it said that the survey showed 24% disagreed with the direction the country is taking for the future. 26% agreed and 50% were unsure. So if you strip out the disagreement and you strip out the unsure, the kind of the fence sitters, you only have about a quarter of the population that thinks the country is going in the right direction for the future. Isn't that quite scary?
Actually, to me, the 50% unsure count in the negative camp, because it's this kind of like possibility that you think that things aren't that great, right? Because you're not sure. Because if you were really positive, you would say, yes, I'm feeling good. So to me, this is not a good set of numbers. But I think one thing I want to highlight is that this worry index is actually the first of its kind by Think Tank, as you said, Emera Research. Now, the CEO of this research think tank is Dato' Rais Hussein Muhammad Arif, who also happens to be a Bersatu Supreme Council member. So maybe it's good for them, you know, like a pulse on the nation, like a 19-20-month check on how they're doing.
A wake-up call. Yes. Like, yeah.
Maybe he'll have the ear of the Prime Minister and be like, hey, this survey says this. Maybe you want to address these things, right? Because, I mean, things like cost of basic needs, lack of job opportunities, a lot of it comes down to like dollars and cents, ringgit and cents, right? That's not a pun intended. That's not, but...
Are you sure it wasn't a plug?
I'm just so used to saying that. But really, it comes down to these real bread and butter issues. People are worried about their futures. And young people are worried about where the next industries are going to come from, right? We talk about Industry 4.0, but where are the tangible elements? You know, we had a new government come in, and one of the first things that they're pushing forward is a third national car, which is, I don't know how to feel about that, but, you know, I was in Georgetown, the Georgetown Literary Festival over the weekend, and I attended a session with Professor Jomo, and he was talking about how we need to look at different things, whether it's pharmaceuticals, we need to cater to the Asian market, and even things like, if we want to do automotive, then double down on our partnership with Geely, right? Geely has the expertise and the technological know-how and the scale. Maybe we can actually make Proton a regional player. But look at these, you look at the list, and it's just all down to people are worried about money.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about this survey shows that the divide actually between the rural and the urban, and in a way, those who have more and those who have less. So the rural actually less likely to support the government. I thought that was quite interesting. Plus, of course, if you earn less, you feel less good about yourself. You feel more worried about the economy, right?
Yeah,
which is and normal and
because
expected.
All of these, because when you are concerned about when your next paycheck is going to come in or how much money you have to feed your families, you know, all of the ideological discussions that happen in urban centres, that doesn't matter. Because your immediate concern is cost of living and your immediate concern is the welfare of your of yourselves and your families.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the survey, right? The approval rate for the government was the highest amongst those earning 5,000 ringgit and above, right? And that was only 39% were happy with the direction the government was taking. So it shows that, you know, it's that Maslow hierarchy of needs. Once your base needs have been met, then you can think about the bigger picture things. But if you're worried about tomorrow, why do you care about where things are in 5 to 10 years? Mm-hmm. Because you've got bigger things to worry about, more pressing issues.
I mean, for sure, whether you earn enough money, you know, to cover your expenses. And then at the same time, there's this great sense that cost of living pressure is real. You know, cost is spiraling out of control. Housing is too expensive. I mean, you hear these complaints a lot. But I wonder if whether we are too impatient. Because I want to give a little bit of breathing space to the current government. Are we too impatient and expecting miracles to happen in these 2 years? I mean, bear in mind, there is this backdrop of global slowdown. You know, it is a reality. It's not just Malaysia that's feeling it. We see it in the region, right? Singapore barely missed a technical recession. Hong Kong is in a recession.
Yeah.
So, you know, the economics of the world don't help. But yes, I think domestically, definitely, government can always do more.
Yeah, I think it would help if people thought the government was doing their utmost to revive the economy, right? Mm. We're not seeing that messaging. We don't trust the government to have our backs in this situation. And that's the problem.
And maybe the government is also not doing enough to bolster the confidence of the people who are looking to them for direction, right? Because one of the early complaints about Pakatan Harapan was that they spent all their time firefighting and not enough time determining the economic direction of the country. And now we are a year and a half in, and you know, as much as we say that they do have, you know, 2.5 years left, 3 years left, that time is rapidly shrinking. And it was one of the big criticisms also was that they didn't manage to push through a more controversial legislation in the first year of their power when their support was strongest. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of questions, I think, also reflected in the survey about the viability of the Pakatan Harapan government. But do let us know what you think. Are you unsure of the country's direction in the future? You can WhatsApp us and tell us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are taking a look at what's been said in the papers next, so be sure to stay tuned for that after these messages. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Fool's Errand by Fleet Foxes, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Shaoning and Roshan. It's 6:53 in the morning, Friday the 29th of November, and you know what, guys? If you take a look out the window of our studio, we have a lovely sunset. Sunrise happening right now.
About 12 hours difference there, Lynn, but it is a beautiful start to a Friday morning here.
Yeah, that's one of the highlights of actually working in this nice studio, actually. Yeah. Getting to see the day slowly evolve.
And, you know, it makes you feel optimistic. And there's a message in from WhatsApp, actually, that, getting us to see the other side of the picture, like the things the government has done. So this is from Intern Sabrina, and she's replied in, I can understand why people are unhappy when life pressure sets in. I am grateful for the following, though. Car seat legislation, revamps in education system, corruption, arrest charges, EPF for housewives, laws for child sex offenders, and soon-to-be employment for refugees. And, I mean, she's got a point. There are things that we've seen move forward. The smoking ban from the health ministry. We've seen...
Remember Ideas came out with their study on actually to address concerns that Pakatan hadn't been fulfilling its election manifesto. And they said that actually they'd fulfilled about a third of the promises that they made.
Yeah. So, I mean, a third in through half... Are we halfway through the term?
Not yet. 2 years? Less than 2 years.
So, yeah. 40% through. So, that's not too bad. And they have... It's just that the things that we don't want them to do, it's just very loud, you know, like flying car. It flies in your face, right? It's just so apparent and so easy to talk about.
Well, I mean, we also have people who aren't exactly happy. I mean, KY Ho WhatsApped in and he says, like, frankly, Malaysia has been directionless since 1997, 1998. Our not-so-clever policies since the 70s are digging the rut deeper and deeper, and we're feeling it more and more now. And another, Elvin wrote in and says they're not just firefighting now, they're also firing at each other in the open.
Yeah, that doesn't inspire confidence, right? But at the same time, I look at that and say, at least we know that they aren't just agreeing with each other, you know, that it's not under
that
an oppressed...
our government is not filled with yes men.
Yes, I that it's not is, just is... Barisan Nasional says this and everyone says, okay. You know, there's a... I mean, it's not... It doesn't inspire confidence, but you know that they're willing to fight with each other if need be. Unfortunately, fighting within parties like what we're seeing in PKR, that's not great.
No, but the one thing I am appreciative for in this new government is the fact that we have... we know all this is happening and that we can discuss it relatively openly. I mean, we have all... Yeah, in the old days, would we have even known? There was only one kind of media and, you know, people didn't talk about these things.
Yeah. So for me, the most stark difference was in watching the parliament coverage immediately post GE14, because you actually had ministers getting up and giving information and statistics and saying, okay, we anticipate that this measure is going to cost this much money. Yes, it's a lot, but this is why. And that was something that you never saw under
the previous
governments. It was an
openness, right?
Yes, it was a very stark difference, actually.
Yeah, and let's not forget that even in the media scene, we are seeing that, right? Our ability to cover things is... There's no stress about what to cover.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, for example, like Malaysia Reserve, the headline, Malaysia lacks talent to develop blockchain technology. The headline says it, you're not doing enough. In the past, would we have seen a headline like this?
I mean, look, a few years ago, The Edge was shut down for 3 months for covering 1MDB, right? And today, that's not on the... we We have confidence that that will not happen anymore. And that, I think, is a big... It's a massive improvement.
Actually, just the fact that we see so much pushback from opposition lawmakers is notable, because it may well not have happened under the previous administration, because this government has tried to make a commitment to freedom of speech, and you know, whatever else you may say about them, they have tried their utmost to stick to it. In our discussions this morning, we haven't had much time for the papers, but we are heading into the business end of the Morning Run, where we will be discussing some of the major news of the day. But first, here are a couple of messages and then the news. Be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.